Good morning, and thank you for joining us for another installment of Coffee Talk. Today's topic is China, and I'm here with Dave Sutton. My name is Fadi Dawood, and Dave is our resident expert of China. He's one of our program editors, and most importantly, he is somebody who has lived in China and speaks Mandarin. So it's it should be an interesting discussion and conversation on China. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. Thanks for having me here. Dajia hao, I guess I should say.
Yeah. So, China. We keep hearing about China, all the sort of doom and gloom news stories about China's economy. We keep hearing now about China due to the Panama Papers, which we discussed in our last Coffee Talk. So, if you want to discuss that, yeah, check that out. But really, I want to talk about the complexity of China's social and cultural, makeup. In essence, China is not this, monolithic place that's producing products into an international community with a billion people that all think and do exactly the same thing, or are all the same, even ethnically or socially or even economically for that matter. You have the very, very rich, and you have the very, very poor. You have religious diversity, social diversity, political diversity in the country. So, I just want to touch upon the social and cultural diversity first.
Yeah. And
the regional diversity, essentially, the geographic diversity.
Definitely. So, yeah, my experience, and I guess I always like to say first, I'm a China optimist, and relating to the doom and gloom arguments, there's something there, but like you said, a lot of this has to do with the complexity and the amount of change that's going on. But definitely to start, just to give people an idea, China itself is made up of more than 50 minorities. And, within those groups, there's the different religions. And especially, there's a lot of different dialects within China. It's not just Mandarin and Cantonese. There's differences in terms of the spoken language in practically every city and town. So right there, you have, your little subgroups and cliques that exist. There's a big difference between North and South China, that is often talked about, by the Chinese themselves, and then you've got East and West, urban and rural, and rich and poor, as you've pointed out. So yeah, definitely, and especially from the economic perspective, some provinces have been far better managed and are far, more developed than others.
Actually, this is another, in light of all of this, I also, when I think of China, I think of the food culture, for example.
Yeah.
And the complex food culture that is China. If you're going to a generic Chinese restaurant, you're going to get your chicken balls, which are absolutely not Chinese.
Yeah.
With that red sauce that is quite hideous to taste. But at the same time, there's this complexity to China's food culture, for example.
Yeah.
And this complexity sort of reflects the complexity, the geographic and the social complexity in China. If you're eating food that is generally served for peasants or food that is served for individuals that are very wealthy.
Food is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
it's like four main regional, if you were to clump them, you would say that there's basically four main regional types of cuisine, like Cantonese being the one that we often have in America, although it's changed greatly compared to what it's like in China itself. But yeah. Absolutely. That's a great way of looking at it in terms of the differences
in
food.
So, as a result, I don't think China's economy... I think China's economy is just as complex as it's... I know I've read about this in multiple places, where China has multiple economies. Just that, does have multiple cities or multiple... Despite the centralization of the regime in China, and despite the fact that China's, governing party, Communist Party, tries to centralize things in Beijing... there is also a certain amount of autonomy in each region.
Yeah.
And, that's something that we always have to keep in mind. When we talk about a 6% or 7% growth rate in China, yeah, it sounds fantastic.
It's aggregate for the entire
country.
But
is that the same for everywhere?
Yeah.
It's not. Some places are, not growing as fast as other places. Economic wealth is not being sort of distributed equally in society, obviously. So it's not, when we are studying China and we're thinking of China, we should keep that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. And especially in terms of governance, to go back to your point about the central government, yes, there's the essential authority, but in terms of how those edicts or laws or whatever are carried out in the various by the various provincial governments and local governments is quite stark. I started out my time in China in Qinhuangdao, which is just east of Beijing, and it was originally planned to be a suburb basically of Beijing. The level of development isn't nearly as high as Beijing itself or my favorite city, Dalian, which, has close to, the same standards you would see in Toronto in terms of sanitation, in terms of, the quality of the police and enforcement, and just the business environment, certainly.
So why is it actually, why is it your favorite city, out of curiosity?
Why is it my favorite city? Dalian is, in my mind, the most cosmopolitan and geographically interesting city within China.
Okay.
I will say immediately, I haven't spent time in Hong Kong or Guangzhou, but from Shanghai north, that's my statement. Dalian is by far my favorite
city.
So not
even Shanghai, that matches it.
No, not
even close. Legendary Shanghai.
Not even close. You compare Dalian and the, how it's been managed and how it's been run, and then you look at some other provinces, especially probably far more westward, the types of jobs that people are going to be doing there, the types of foreign direct investment that goes there is distinctly different. So when we look at that 6% or the decrease in the GDP reports, it is a bit of an odd statement to say that China's not doing well or there's this doom and gloom when some parts of China are still doing well. In terms of specific issues like the real estate boom and the supposed excess of houses, sure, there could be something there as an issue. But again, it's more regional than, say, the country as a whole.
The other thing that I actually also enjoy reading about, when it comes to China and discussing when it comes to China, generally speaking, is the complicated relationship between the various regions in China. And there seems to be this sort of, I wouldn't even just call it clash, but, in a way, a competition between the various regions on who can, reach a certain goal or a certain standard faster. And that's something that, I don't know, do you feel that in society? Is that reflected in the population of these regions? Or is it not? I'm not really sure. I've never been into China. I've never really discussed this with people who actually live in China. So I've always been curious about it.
Same way that we have, some of those dynamics in Canada in terms of, Alberta and Quebec, Ontario, and sort of rivalry, inter-provincial rivalry that goes on in Canada. You have those same elements in China. I think sometimes it's more pronounced than others, just as here. But, yeah, sometimes you hear about the differences between, north and south in terms of the, their business styles, their success, their ability to develop. And again, you also, and this comes up a lot, is the differences between rural and urban.
That's a very important one. I mean, it seems to me that, despite what we talk about, rural communities are still a lot more forgotten in China than, say, urban populations in terms of infrastructure, in terms of, services, in terms of wealth, in terms of just lifestyle in general.
It seems
that rural populations have the short end of the stick.
Well, they're certainly trying to move a lot of the rural populations into the city. And also, there is sort of like a difference in almost thinking, I feel like. If you go into the rural areas and you look at the farms, they're not like United States where it's like a corporate farm. They're not necessarily employing the most scientifically or best methods in expanding. You still have a lot of family plots and trying to implement change to sort of improve that situation, I could see how that might be difficult. So yeah, there's definitely like a big difference, I think, in terms of the way people think, their priorities, and in the cities you got people moving forward, looking at the ways that the rest of the world does things and sort of being a lot more flexible.
Yeah, I think really what we see in China is this very interesting very complicated relationship between urban and rural populations. And as a result, it's actually making it's affecting actually outside. It's affecting this. Its impact is actually being felt outside of China, where you see a lot of this foreign capital coming from urban populations, where people are actually, you know, living and working and making lots of money, coming to places like Vancouver or Toronto, here in Canada. I mean, it's a very interesting. I mean, the New York Times is even highlighting this issue.
Yeah, in terms of Chinese tourists coming abroad, it's certainly been an issue in the past. It's something that they've had to address.
But it's not even tourists. It's even like
relocating.
Money.
Well, yeah. To go back to that urban rural and even just the impact of location within China, you know, where you're registered, like your Hukou card has a pretty big impact in terms of, you know, where your child has a chance of going to school. So if you're born in Beijing, you have a much higher chance of getting into one of the good schools. Now, for a lot of other areas that still have money, you know, a lot of them are relocating to countries like Canada in order to give their child a better chance of getting into a good school and to, you know, have a better chance of life. Another reason, to go back to what you kind of said, is, you know, rich people seeing opportunity abroad or seeing a safer place to put their money, obviously, with, you know, corruption crackdowns and changes in the market and whatnot. So definitely that sort of, you know, urban-rural divide and the changes within China, the complexity, has changed, you know, how China's makeup, you know, it's people, some have the access to go abroad and some are, you know, just moving to the city for the first time. And that's certainly an interesting dynamic that's going on.
I think it's very interesting to talk about these issues and to talk about the way China has, you know, maintained or is trying to clamp down or not even clamp down, trying to deal with all these issues and trying to really play a role in, you know, playing with these shifts and changes, playing with the change in economy, the quote-unquote westernization of its populations and the outflow of capital outside of China.
Corruption crackdowns
is another way, which we really don't have time to unfortunately focus on today. That's a whole coffee talk on its own, I think.
Yeah.
China is a very, you can't really do justice to China in a few short minutes that we have. So I think we should cut it short here today, just cut it off today here, and maybe even come back to this and discuss China further at another time. Thanks for talking to me, Dave.
And again, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening.